Why Helium and iPhones Don't Mix, Cabo's new voice-activated universal remote, and the world's thinnest laptop by Acer. Live from the Twitch studios in Petaluma, California, it's the new Screensavers. Yeah!
Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twit.
The new Screensavers is brought to you by Hover. Register a domain name with Hover and build your online brand today. Go to hover.com/twit and save 10% off your first purchase.
I'm Patty Norton.
Hey, you were the old Screensaver. Look at that. I got
one
a picture.
Of many.
I got a picture to prove it.
There were several Screensavers.
There's Patrick and me back in the good old days.
I had hair.
That's got to be 2000, thereabouts.
Give or take.
1999.
That's the old set.
Yeah, so.
I had a lot of hair, and boy, did they pancake on the makeup on the both of us.
I know. My skin is so smooth.
Look at the size of my wristwatch.
Spackle. I didn't know Android Wear was available back then. That's amazing.
Which watch was that?
Oh, I don't know. I actually wore real watches at the time.
Real watches?
Real watches. Now I wear fake watches.
I was watchless then, and I'm watchless now.
Oh, no. We all are watching Mr. Patrick Norton on TechFying.
Thank you so much.
TechFying and this AV week in computer hardware.
Oh,
and AV Excellence.
I was building.
With Robert Herron. And Twitch now with Alan Malventano.
Yes. Mr. Ryan Schrout was hired by Intel.
That's how good he is.
On one hand, yes, that is how good he is. He is that good. But also they wanted somebody to sort of bring, well, I think he's going to adult over the benchmarking operations at Intel. I think that's a gracious way of putting
it. That's interesting. Yeah.
Well, there was a FURA recently.
Yeah. He's a fairly high level.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, the FURA, there have been a couple of FURAs, Intel's benchmarks.
Yeah.
One was what?
We took the processor we already know is faster than an AMD Ryzen processor, but then figured out how to, well, we didn't. We hired an independent third party
to figure out
how to test it in a way that made it look much
even
slower.
Faster. Slower? Oh, the Ryzen.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's a gross oversimplification.
They had two different benchmark problems.
My understanding is, and Ryan really hasn't talked to me about this because, you know,
he's not allowed to.
Yeah. There's contracts and mayhem,
secret.
And I think he I think they can secretly detonate his house in Kentucky if he violates a contract. But, I mean, literally, like, every group in Intel has its own benchmarking and performance crew.
Right.
And so
they need somebody to oversee.
Oh, I think they just want a little consistency and maybe some policy. And
it's a great title. He's Chief Performance Strategist.
Yes.
Wow. Anyway.
Well, it's also about being honest about the performance of your
Absolutely.
Products and how
Absolutely.
They fare in the market.
Good for them. And Ryan will do a good job with that. Yeah. What's great is so will Alan, because we love Alan. He's been on PC Perspective staff for some time. He's been on Twitch many times, on this show many times. He was our hard drive guru and a nuclear submarine engineer, right? What did he do on the subs?
He was the master chief that kept the officers from screwing up the boat, sir.
It's
he wouldn't say
boat.
That. But
Keep
I would
your
say
hands
that.
Off my boat. You go up there in the wardroom and do your...
Well, no. I mean, they have very wonderful Annapolis graduates that actually have the big
engineering
degrees. Alan's awesome. But yeah,
he will be a great ad.
We did one this week where we talk about one of the things we're going to be talking about today, the glories of Apple.
Oh, we'll get to that in a second. But first, let's talk about what's coming up. I have two laptops here. The thinnest Acer laptop, the thinnest laptop made, the Swift 7, and then one of the biggest Chromebook screens ever made. And boy, it's a great comparison. This is also from Acer.
One of these things is
Spin
not like the other.
15. It's nice, though. I like this aluminum textured aluminum surface.
You've
I'll
been
have a
petting
review
it
for
on
you.
And off all day.
Then, Patrick, you've got the Cavo.
Cavo came out with amazing, crazy, virtual machine vision, AI, voice-controlled, kind of basically a super competitor for Harmony.
Or Harmony?
For Harmony.
Oh, so their idea is it's a kind of universal remote.
Yes. Okay. And they reached for the stars and they didn't quite reach them on the $400 version. Out of nowhere, they came out with a $100 version. We're going to talk about what it does and what it doesn't do.
Actually, $100 for what that looks like it does is pretty impressive. We'll get to that in a second. OnePlus, remember, they were going to have a big event on Tuesday. Turns out some other big company came along and said, we want to have a big event on Tuesday.
In Brooklyn.
In Brooklyn. So OnePlus moved their announcement of the OnePlus 6T to a day earlier on Monday. We've managed to acquire a OnePlus 6T. Jason Howell will have his review of what many consider the best Android phone out there.
That was my question. Like, I want to know what Jason thought so I can decide whether or not to upgrade my Moto.
As do we all.
That's so say up. We all.
So say we all.
Oh, my goodness. We're going to answer some of your questions in the mailbag.
We have that, too.
We like
and I'm going to do, I think, a feat of daring do. I have two phones here, two very expensive phones, a Samsung Galaxy Note 9 and an iPhone. This is a less expensive iPhone, the XR, which I quite like, and it's beautifully in red. And I am going to subject it to a torture test with balloons.
Actually, the contents of the balloons.
We'll see what's going to happen. This is going to be, it'll all make sense. It's actually
you're going to kill $2,000 worth of phones.
I might.
Can I have the parts when you're done?
What's really interesting is this one of the, you know, we've for now 20 years been diagnosing people's computer problems and trying to help them. But every once in a while, a problem.
Things get weird.
It comes along that's just like, that can't possibly happen. But it did, and the answer may surprise you as to why. But first,
stunned and amaze you.
The hot topics of the week. Number one, a very good story out of Florida. The Florida Court of Appeals overturned a lower court ruling that said that police could compel a suspect to unlock his phone using the passcode.
What?
So we've always mentioned the fact that if you're using fingerprint or face ID, that we know the police, in fact, warrants even say, can just unlock your phone. They can say,
thanks for that list of contacts.
Or they can say, put your finger on this, and that's legal.
Yeah.
That's part of a search. But it's always been thought, and unfortunately not much proven in court, so this is good to get this case, always been thought that there's something different. We know police can ask for a fingerprint when they arrest you. They can take a hair for DNA without your permission. Because that's not considered self-incriminating testimony. That's just physical evidence. But it's always been thought that asking you for your password is asking for the contents of your mind, and that should be somehow protected because the police shouldn't be able to force you to divulge something that might be incriminating. That's the Fifth Amendment.
Sure.
The lower court held in the case, and we don't need to go into the details of the case, but they held in the case that, no, it was okay for the police to essentially do a fishing expedition, to go into the phone looking for evidence of a crime. The circuit court said, no, unless you know specifically what is on that phone, you cannot demand it. You have anybody has the right to be protected against self-incrimination. It's the Fifth Amendment they used as the rationale for this, that a warrant has to be very specific, because otherwise, and we've said this for a long time, the stuff that's in your phone,
it's your life.
It's your life. Your location everywhere, all of your personal information, texts, and that no law enforcement agency should be able to just go in there looking for evidence of a crime. You have to be very specific about what you're looking for.
I also, the first person to email in and say, well, if you don't have anything to hide, you shouldn't have a problem.
Shame on you.
Yeah, what he said.
What we always tell them is, well, I guess you leave the door to the bathroom open. Come on in.
Just poop on the floor.
Come on
in. You have
in.
No right to privacy.
Yeah. So that's the one of the first court rulings. This won't be the end of it.
No.
But it's one of the first court rulings that upheld this notion we've always thought to be the case, that your passcode is protected.
I mean, as our lives and as, you know, criminals and terrorists and all sorts of other things that scare people in the dark, no matter what the actual statistics are about how they impact Americans and the rest of the world, is people, they just, you know, I mean, one of our senior senator here in California doesn't seem to think we have a need for strong encryption.
Right.
You know, and
we do.
For no other reason, just so I can securely buy things on eBay.
Right. Well, here's the good news. I believe that Tuesday there will be a referendum on this subject nationwide, and everybody who's watching
will have the opportunity
to buy me something on eBay.
To buy you something on eBay.
Vote. Hey, the message.
Vote.
Right, left, middle. Vote.
Vote.
Get
That's
off
all.
Your sh- you know, stuff and go vote.
You have no right to complain if you don't vote.
Yeah.
I don't want to hear any complaints next week if you don't vote. If you do vote, complain all you want.
One of the biggest whiners we ever worked with, I asked them, they're like, did you vote? I'm like, no, it doesn't make a difference. I'm like, shut up.
And you don't get to whine.
Stop it.
It's part of the deal. So Apple had its event on Tuesday.
Yes.
We watched. And
you
I
watched.
Spent,
I read the summaries later on.
Yeah, probably saved you a lot of time. It was an hour and 15 minutes, very concise.
Yeah.
They announced four new products. They did not announce new AirPods. They never mentioned that wireless charging that they still can't get out a year and a half later. But they did do something Mac fans like myself are very excited about. They started with the Mac. They updated two of the most venerable members of the Mac lineup.
He means old and slow as crap.
The Mac
venerable is a nice way of saying old and slow.
The MacBook Air,
I'm
which
venerable.
I invented in 2009, the MacBook Air invented the Ultrabook category.
No, it did not.
Oh, it did. It was the first Ultrabook.
It may have redefined it.
No, no. It was the first. Unibody aluminum. Look it up, Patrick. Everybody in the world copied it after 2009. That's
sorry. For
ago.
Some reason, I'm thinking of like the, you know, the very small laptops.
We used
to call
the
them
netbooks.
Ultra-portables. No.
This is not
but,
a netbook.
No, but I mean ultra-portables, netbooks. It's not like they...
They invented the Ultrabook, which was a very thin unibody aluminum design, portable, great battery life. But that was 2009.
Yes.
And everybody and their brothers have made better versions of the Ultrabook since then in the intervening 9 years.
Harsh, but fair.
Apple did, you know, update it from time to time. We were all
well,
hoping...
Well, they haven't... It's been 2 years.
Yeah.
A long it's been, 2 years.
Yeah. And we were hoping that Apple might make a sub-$1,000 MacBook Air. They still sell the old crappy MacBook Air for $1,000. So there's that. You don't want that. You want the one with the good Retina display. You now, here's the best news of all. A real escape key and fingerprint. So you can do both. You don't get
it's
that
nice.
Touch bar, which I consider pretty gimmicky.
Scroll down to the processor information on
it's
that.
It's not a great processor. It is a processor we'd never heard of, an Intel processor, a Y processor. The TDP is 7 watts.
It's a dual-core, super low-power. They call 1.6. It a Core i5, but literally Intel built this for Apple. It's dual-core.
1.6 gigahertz.
What I want to know is, like, how many threads is it running?
Two.
Dual-core, two. Wow, it's going to be...
No, wait a minute. Is it hyper-threaded? It might be four.
Might be. It's going to be
you
slow
saw that,
either way.
That leaks. There's a new hyper-threading power smash or something that's a... Never mind. There's another exploit on Intel chips. What a shock. Which this chip will probably be vulnerable to. I'm not sure. I bought one because we're going to review it.
Right.
It's going to be slow, I'm afraid.
It's got enough memory. This has a decent amount of memory.
Up to 16 gigs. This chip will not support more. DDR3, not DDR4.
Yeah.
SSD, and I presume it's an NVMe SSD, so that'll make a difference. They call it an eighth generation. This makes me laugh because, frankly, this has been the longest generation in the history of Intel.
Well, technically, they did start releasing ninth generation processors, but you know, they just haven't released them at the process we expected. I digress. But it seems like a great all-purpose. I need to do a small window of spreadsheets. I need to browse. I need to do email
and get really good battery life.
Yeah.
I want
to go to the Apple store and load up my usual like 130 tabs in Chrome
and see
what happens.
Yeah.
It's got enough memory. I just want to see that dual core processor.
It's interesting.
Sing.
They say its performance comparable to an Xbox One S.
That's actually the iPad Pro.
Oh, is it? Oh,
that's the iPad Pro.
Well, it's never mind.
Well, it's great. I mean, it's a nice. It's funny because they kind of mix the design aesthetic from the MacBook. You know, the MacBook Air
I
and
like
the MacBook
new
Pro.
MacBook Pros.
They
I mean,
they
the
kind
new,
of mix the design
Pros.
Aesthetic. Yeah,
you like the iPads.
I like the iPad Pros, but it's like the MacBook Air. It's kind of like it's got like 1 foot in the MacBook Pro design aesthetic. It does have two Thunderbolt ports. It does have
that's
a headphone jack.
And this is part of the system on a chip, so they get it for free from Intel. But it does.
They didn't have to put the port on the
they
side.
They didn't have to do it. It's got display charging and data, so it does everything Thunderbolt 3 does, which is nice.
I'm playing around with a USB like a Dell monitor that does USB-C charging, and it's really kind of fascinating to just walk up to your one cable and have everything work.
Well, that's what they
the
said
everything
about
working part is the hard part.
The new Airs also have USB-C, and you can charge an iPhone from the iPads. Not Airs, the new iPad Pros. It's so confusing. The really confusing thing is, after they announced the Macs, and a new Mac Mini, too, which is 4 years since they've updated that. We bought that, too. Then they announced the iPads, and they...
The iPad Pro.
The iPad Pros are actually probably faster than either
of the
these
laptop.
Macs. And I really feel like this is the beginning of the end for Macintosh. This iPad Pro with a full keyboard is really what Apple thinks of as your next computer.
They think of it as your next computer. I think it's really the beginning of the death of the Intel processor more than anything
for
else.
Sure.
Because they've put a for mediocre sure. processor inside their lightest laptop. I don't think they're going to get rid of laptops. I think they want the margins that are on these big tablets more. But this is crazy. It's the I want to say
look
the,
at this look at the bezel-less design.
Yeah, I love
that. Gorgeous.
I was surprised. I had been told the home button was going away. I looked at it and I was like, I really like the
you know
home
what
button
else
going
went away, which really shouldn't have gone away? The headphone jack. There's plenty of room to put a little tiny headphone jack on that thing.
You know, don't get me started.
It makes me so mad. You could say, on the iPhone, we didn't have room for a headphone jack. You can't say that on a 12.9-inch iPad Pro. But they didn't put it in. They didn't put it in because courage. So now I have to either use Google's Pixel headphones in the Type-C port or a Type-C adapter, or I have to use wireless.
You keep going.
Look how many. He has so many headphones, he has to carry a separate bag.
No, I have clothes in here.
Oh. Wait, were you overnight?
Well, I have a USB-C adapter and a...
I do, too. I carry those with me. In
everywhere.
A somewhat smaller bag.
Ah, there we go. You, too, can destroy...
How many adapters do you have?
Well, actually, this is
that's a Type-A connector.
Yes, but I have a USB-C adapter for this.
So your headphone... goes into a Type-A USB adapter, which then goes into USB Type-A to Type-C.
Yeah.
So that you can listen to those headphones.
I like that. Well, that's also a lot better than any
You're
headphone
You're in dongle
jack.
Hell, my friend.
Yes, I am. And you know what? You're going to join me there.
I know.
Just
I'm
as
very
soon
disappointed.
As you...
I use my iPad as my music device because I had a lot of storage. These go all the way up to terabyte. Very expensive.
Extremely. And we should point out, these are, I agree, they're beautiful. They're basically claiming that they've doubled the graphics performance. They've got significant, general CPU performance upgrades. The A12X Bionic, I think they're calling it. Bionic. I'm just going to hear Steve Austin's voice in the back of my head every time I see that.
It's even better than the A12 that's in the iPhone, iPhones.
Yeah, they seem to be pushing. There's a great Verge article where they basically walked through this is the language that Apple used to basically say game developers make more games for this. But they're basically that was the line you mentioned earlier. It's
Xbox
as powerful
1S.
As an Xbox
yeah,
One S.
Why don't you make why aren't you making AAA games for this, guys?
Yeah, well, because it didn't exist until a few minutes ago, and the market's
still,
a lot smaller.
I don't know
smaller.
If they will. Yeah, I don't know if they.
And
will.
The Xbox One S costs like what $200 now, $250 bucks versus how much for the entry
so
level?
So the 11-inch iPad, which is the same size is the old 10.5-inch, but an 11-inch screen in that size starts at $799 for 64 gigs. The 12.9-inch, which is the same size screen as the 12.9-inch before it, but a smaller form factor, so they shrunk. That is $999 to start. You can order them right now, and if you ordered early or you go to a store on Wednesday, you should be able to get it Wednesday. We will have it for next week's screensavers, both the new iPads, the 11-inch, the 12.9-inch, the Mac Mini, and a MacBook Air. And please take my credit card from me now.
I need a new camera.
A new credit card. All right, let's move on.
Nice.
I read on Kyle Wien's iFixit blog at iFixit.org the most wild detective story I've ever read. Let me give you the setup, then we're going to get Kyle Wien's from iFixit on. Eric Woolridge is a systems specialist at a hospital near Chicago. It's called Morris Hospital. They got a brand new MRI machine.
Right.
And then he starts getting calls from people in the hospital. My phone's died. My phone's died. It stopped working. It froze up. And he thought, what the heck? Because it was coincident with his installation of the MRI. Maybe there was an electromagnetic pulse that fried everything.
Right.
But it was only iPhones from iPhone 6 or later. There was an iPhone 5. Didn't get any problem. And it was Apple Watches. No Android devices at all.
Huh.
It's a mystery. He couldn't figure it out. Posted it on Reddit. Bunch of sysadmins on Reddit start thinking and say,
you should check that machine for a helium leak because it could be the helium. And yes, indeed, this MRI machine, a little tiny puncture, enough for a significant amount of helium to leak into the HVAC system, about 120 liters of liquid helium.
Whoa.
That's 90,000 liters of gaseous helium. Kyle Ween says the nurses must have been talking funny for the, for a day or two.
It's time for the enema, Mr. Laporte.
Kyle Weens, welcome from iFixit.org. And before we even talk about this, let me move the balloons out of the way. Before we even talk about this, thank you so much from all of us for the work you did, along with the EFF, Cory Doctorow, on getting the Copyright Office to back down, to say the DMCA does not protect companies against your right to repair stuff. Well done.
Thank you. Yeah, we're really excited about the ruling. We got broad sweeping right to tinker and modify all kinds of products, including it's now legal to jailbreak your Amazon Echo.
Isn't that awesome? Woo! But weirdly enough, not your boat, not your plane.
Yeah, we didn't prove that case. Maybe next time.
But your tractor, which is huge. I'm sure John Deere is furious about this because, of course, they said you can't repair your John Deere tractor. There's copyright DMC-protected software in there.
And you can't protect your tractor because we made it damn near impossible.
Well, there's another. That's another story.
But the big deal this time is that they're allowing third parties to do that repair. So you don't have to just fix your tractor yourself. You can hire a mechanic to do it for you.
Good. Nice. Still no pressure on these companies to release parts or manuals, but you guys are doing
or service diagnostic software. And that's why we're going to need state right to repair legislation. We've got a whole bunch of states queued up to get started trying again in 2019 for that.
So that's a huge, by the way, that's a huge deal. This does not mean that those state laws do not need to go forward. We do need those state laws, but now they have some teeth because of this ruling.
And independent car repair shops have the ability or have the tools they need to repair cars because basically Massachusetts was like,
Yeah, thanks to Massachusetts.
Yeah, Massachusetts basically passed a law that had huge influence in the United States, and finally Congress stepped up and went, we should do something that actually benefits the American people. I don't know if current, you know...
They're too busy for that. Sorry.
You know.
They got other things. But that's not why you're here, Kyle. You're here because of these balloons and that smartphone. So, Woolridge posted on Reddit. How did you get involved in this?
I was browsing Reddit late at night, as you will do. I frequent the sysadmin subreddit, and I saw the story, and this was kind of early in the speculation. People didn't really know what it was. And I saw the helium suggestion and started digging because I knew that there's these mechanical parts inside these phones. Mm-hmm. And that's something I think most of us think the silicon is solid state, but actually inside some of these solid state chips are MEMS devices. And MEMS is a microelectromechanical system, and it's actually a physical device that is moving around inside one of these chips. We use them for accelerometers, for gyros, and Apple uses them for something that nobody else does.
Which is the clock chip.
Which is the clock. And the clock is like the heart of the any computer.
It's literally the beating heart.
Right.
Yes, it's the pulse. It sends out every rising clock. Right, the literal clock that makes everything tick starts with this 32 kilohertz resonator. And it used to be that these were quartz resonators, like you think about a quartz watch.
Right.
Back in the 60s, 50s, we invented quartz oscillators. That was the beginning of the digital revolution. The problem with those oscillators is that they're kind of big. And by kind of big, I mean like 3 millimeter by 1 millimeter or so.
Huge.
And huge.
Even
Android
bigger
phones.
Than a headphone jack.
Not quite.
Don't get me started.
And I think probably it was when Apple was working on the Apple Watch and they decided to put it on the phones too. And so they found this new chip from this little company, SiTime, and it is a MEMS resonator rather than a quartz resonator.
How micro is a MEMS? I mean, how small are we talking here?
Smaller We're talking like 50 jack. Microns across. It's
50
tiny.
Millionths of a meter. That's... You can't see it. In fact, the pictures you have on your blog post are from scanning electron microscopes.
It's so pretty.
It is pretty, isn't it?
This is an accelerometer.
Yeah.
And what you're actually looking here in this photo, this is actually a busted accelerometer. In the top right, that little arm broke off when they were taking the image.
Wow. So you can see that's a physical arm.
And that one's going to be a little bit broken. Here's another one. They really are lovely.
This is a gyroscope. It's a little bit more complex. And you can also see the scale here is bigger. It's zoomed out more. But doesn't this look like the Death Star?
Yeah. Yes. I love it.
I can imagine a little X-Wing going in.
So how does helium impact these devices, though?
Well, it turns out that, I mean, you can imagine that the size that we're talking about, getting molecules in there can interfere with them. And there is a ceramic casing on the outside of the – I mean, they call it a package. There's a ceramic package surrounding this chip. And that ceramic package is impervious to large molecules like nitrogen and oxygen, but small molecules like hydrogen and helium can get inside.
You're kidding.
And normally,
these little two-atom molecules, helium molecules, can physically impede the arms?
They get in there, and I'm not sure if they act like a grain of sand or
like
if they're
a dust
they're
particle. Kind
of, effectively,
a lot
smaller. You think like a clock getting a speck of dust in the works. So this gets helium in, and it stops the clock. And if the clock stops, your device is toast. It won't respond. It won't be able to do anything because it's literally the heartbeat.
Is it toast forever?
That's what's crazy is no, it's just toast until the helium leaves again. And so the question is, how long will it take the helium to leave again? So I did this a few days ago with a phone. I've got my balloon here, and I put it in a Ziploc bag and with the phone, and it took about 5 minutes, and the phone died. And then 2 full days later, the phone came back to life.
All right, we're going to try this. Can you help us?
There was no saving it.
Now, if I were to open this balloon in here.
Did you say there was no saving it?
Well, not for 2 days.
Okay, he had to let it air out. Now, yeah. if I were to cut this balloon open in here, would everybody's phone die?
I don't think it would be enough. I feel like this would be a more widely spread issue, right?
Yeah, I mean, he had a lot. He had 90,000.
Like every time there was a birthday?
Yeah. Gallons.
But even right, so, leaders. You're going to be dousing this thing in much more helium than the hospital had. I mean, even, 120, right?
So helium rises.
I'm going to sacrifice 2 phones here. This is the iPhone XR, brand new. And I thought we should try this with an Android. Have you tried it with an Android device?
I haven't tried it with Android. I'm just relying on Eric's word that the Androids were unaffected. So I'm curious. It could be that Samsung is using this. You know, when we do our teardowns, we look inside these devices and we note every bit of hardware we can identify. The problem with these SiTime devices is they are so tiny. They're less than a millimeter square.
You haven't put an electron microscope?
It's hard to tell what they are.
All right. Sorry, I was going to say you don't have an electron microscope at the
handy. Do you have any advice for how to do this?
Helium rises, right?
Helium rises, so I should do it upside down.
Flip it upside down and then cut it. You're not going to be able to like shove a straw in there. These are high tech balloons.
Okay. So go ahead and oh yeah, no air. Oh yeah, then we'll know the helium's in there because. It will fill the bag.
Okay. We'll find out.
Unless Patrick's keeping it. Okay, I'm going to hold it here, cut it here. All right, now it's cut. You got it over there? All right, let's see if it inflates the if I can inflate the bag. Okay. Let's inflate the bag. Wait a minute, I didn't cut it well.
I think you have to cut it lower.
Got it. Okay, it's still sealed. This is so exciting. So, you were able to duplicate the results. Oh, there we go.
Well, and this is fundamentally science, right?
Now, you know,
we have to replicate the experiment.
We should have put the phones in first, but okay. Now, that's definitely got a ball
certainly
of helium
has
in there.
Some helium.
All right. Keep it upside down.
Oh,
I'm going to put another phone in here, and I'm going to start the timer. Boom. Whoops. Introducing bedtime. No. I don't want bedtime.
You'll be able to tap it through the.
Can
just
I tap
get the
it through
other phone
here?
In there.
All right, let's
seal
it up.
Yeah, you can tap it through the.
Okay, and I'm going to start the clock. No, I don't. No, stop. Just give me a stopwatch. All right, start the. Okay, so it's still operating. We've started the clock. It's sealed, and I think it's got some helium in there. I hope it does. Let's do the same thing with this. Are you ready to do it?
Oh, sure.
Put some more helium in there.
Why not? Maybe
get a little more helium in there this time.
We got to really fill this thing up.
Get this in there first.
Okay, wait a minute.
I would actually have the bag, relatively open. I think
it doesn't really matter.
The helium probably isn't providing enough force to expand the bag on you.
Okay. Let me get this started. All right. Start the clock on that one. Okay, start. Jeez Louise. Okay. Start. Okay.
It's always the simple things that are so emotionally traumatic.
Fill it in. Fill in the helium. Pump it up there. Pump up the volume. All right. Oh, look at that. That's a lot of helium. That's a ton worth of helium. Those molecules are going right in that little MEMS, and they're going to screw the hell out of that guy. Okay. There's enough there that I clearly got it. It's got something in there. All right. So what was your experience? How long does it take to break the phone?
Well, the phones that I did had been disassembled previously, and so the waterproof seal. Had, so mine died in about 3 minutes. Whoa. Eric was saying it was about 8 minutes for his. So
with a waterproof seal, the helium's going to, because it's such a small molecule, it's smaller than H2O. Right.
Much smaller than water,
Yeah. So it's going to leak in there, and it's going to get in. Patrick's taking a picture.
So we know what the time was when we started them.
Yeah, so the difference in
differential. Because one's at like 132 and one's at like 50.
You know what? If either one of them stops, I think we'll know. We're going to have to check in later in the show.
This is just one of those things where you think you know how these devices work. You know, all of us have been doing this for how long? And if I had bet you $100 that I could kill your phone with helium, you'd say, sure, Kyle, whatever, you're crazy. And here we are.
That is and it's one of the things that I know Patrick and I certainly, we answer a lot of questions. People will come to us with just bizarre problems, and we'll just have to say, I don't know. What I always say, though, is, look, there's no magic, there's no voodoo. These are deterministic machines. There's an absolute physical cause and effect for every single thing that happens, but we just don't know why that particular thing happened.
All you need to do is search through 73 million lines of code, some of the most complex engineering ever mass-produced in the history of humanity, and once you've done that, you'll certainly eventually probably find the problem.
It's a testament to the power of Reddit. That's all I can say.
What I love about this is you can imagine the Apple design engineers when they were picking this chip. They knew it was a vulnerability of the chip. This is in the Apple user manual. It says if you expose your phone to helium, it can cause
damage.
It's
actually in the manual.
Yeah. So you can imagine the trade-off, and some poor intern must have had to go out and look at like use cases of helium and figure out what are the odds, how many customers is this going to impact, and they must have decided that people installing MRI machines were enough of a small enough segment of the Apple user base that they were willing to screw them over in exchange for a little bit tinier chip.
So there are people who this would be a problem for.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Since I published the story, I've gotten emails from like 15 different MRI techs that have all said, oh, yeah, this happens to us all the time.
Oh, my goodness. So that's not unusual. Usually have little leaks in MRI machines
when they're first setting them up and calibrating them and getting them. I mean, because there's actually a lot of off-gassing when you're lowering the temperature initially.
There's a lot of off-gassing in here as well. Go ahead, just.
Well, thank you, Kyle. I appreciate all you've done for all of us on behalf of the screensavers.
iFixit.org is Kyle's right to repair blog. iFixit.com is the site where you can get repair manuals and tools and parts for everything. Thank you, Kyle, for all the great work you've done.
Including Motorola phones now.
How long is my voice going to stay like this is my question.
Forever.
At
my
least
whole
2 days.
Career shot.
Thanks, Kyle. I love it.
Thanks, Kyle.
We're going to... They're still ticking? It takes a licking, and it keeps on ticking. We'll keep an eye on these and see...
We need to force the helium in.
I think it's in there. I mean, it's definitely, you know,
into the phone.
It's puffy. Do you think I have enough phones I can sacrifice a couple?
Yeah.
For a day or two. Or a week.
How many phones do you own right now?
You don't even want to know. quite a few, actually. I have the 10S Max and the Pixel 3. I did not put in helium. So if I need to, I can use
your preferred
those.
Phones.
Actually, I've been carrying the 10R as my daily driver. I really like the size of it.
A lot of people like it.
I love it. And I don't miss the camera, the dual lens, and I don't need the OLED screen. And the battery life on the 10R is incredible.
Best thing about the Pixel 3?
What?
The Pixel 3 XL? The screen's not blue.
It's a little pink, actually. But the camera is excellent in that. Yeah. The Note 9 I love, but again, I have the Pixel 3, so I'll survive. I'll muddle along with just a half dozen phones.
I'm envisioning this sort of fine Corinthian leather rack on top of your dresser where Leo's got phones for all his little moods.
What should I do today? Actually, it's very helpful for Pokemon Go hunting. Sometimes I carry 3 or 4 on my belt.
So you can have all the Pokemon?
Yeah.
Do different phones collect different Pokemon at the same time?
No, I wish.
To your account?
But, you know, one of the problems with Pokemon Go, I'll see if I can find this image. One of the problems with Pokemon Go is during these big events, like there's one going on today, you need 20 people all at once playing the game to take on these raid bosses. But there is a solution for that that I've been considering. Let me see if I can find the image. This is of a guy in China, or actually Taiwan, who has solved this problem. This is the solution I've been looking for. 10 phones, one man. Pokemon victory.
Grandfather Chen.
Look at that. Look at that. I don't know how he even does it. Because I couldn't, you know, I can't fight 10 phones at once. He's become a local celebrity. He's known as Uncle Pokemon. Our show today, bro, we're going to take a look at Cabo's new universal control for your TV.
Cabo's Control Center.
Cabo's Control Center in just a second. But first, a word from our sponsor. Let me see. Are the phones alive?
The phones are still running, ladies and gentlemen.
They're still running. Our show today brought to you by Hover. How many domain names you own, Patrick? I own dozens and dozens.
11.
I have some that I probably will never use, like tunictime.com or fancypants.com. This was back when I was thinking of going into the clothing and haberdashery business. But I can't give them up for some reason.
Anybody two wants paths to diverge in the wood. Leo didn't take the one that ended up with him measuring.
Fancypants.com. It's yours. I'll give it to you for a fair price. But I register them all at hover.com. It's a lot of fun. Hover.com is my choice of registrar. You should have domain names. I think everybody should have their own domain name for their blog, for their email. You want a custom domain name. I love Hover because it makes it very easy for me to get a domain name and have my mail forwarded through that to my regular server. This is one of the other reasons I love Hover. They don't upsell you on a bunch of other stuff. They don't do hosting. They do domain name registration.
Would you like marketing dollars?
Yeah,
for this?
None of that checkbox stuff the other sites give you. Yeah. You get domain privacy, which everybody wants. That's automatic. It's built in. Buying a domain name is the first and biggest step to building your personal brand online. For instance, are you a designer, a creative professional? How about .design? See if Leo.design. Oh, Helium. Helium.global. I want it. Or ediblehelium.com.
Ooh.
Myheliumonline.com.
This has been a big thing. Like, a lot of people who have
helium
made their...
Helium expert, helium mom, helium mo, helium desi, helium Democrat, helium Republican, helium soy. There's quite a few.
It's people, Leo.
Helium dentist. That's a new kind of dentistry. Helium consulting.
He talks like this all the time. Ladies and gentlemen of the jury.
Your domain name is so cool. .design is the latest. I love .design. Web hosts and websites evolve as their brand, their website, and their hosting needs change. But keeping your domain separate from hosting is so important. I was talking to somebody on the radio who bought a domain name through a web hosting company. Mm-hmm. And then when she wanted to move, they wouldn't give her the domain name. They said, no, we own that. It's our domain name.
You just rent it.
That's really not nice.
It's sleazy.
Go to hover.com. Get your domain. The best-in-class customer support team. No upsells. I love the Hover Connect. Show that. They will connect your domain name to many website builders with a simple click, and that is awesome. It works with WordPress.com, our other sponsor, LinkedIn, Tumblr, Twitter, Facebook. So it makes it very easy to set it up. You don't have to do all the DNS stuff. Although I have to say, I live in the DNS management interface on there, and it's great. I love it. It's very easy to use. If you want to do it by hand, you can. 400 domain extensions. .mom. .design. Anything you want. Stand out. Brand yourself online with the perfect domain for you or your business. And can I just say this is a great gift for youngsters, young people, weddings, newborns. Get their domain name and give it to the parents. It's a great gift.
I'm always amazed. People do it for real estate when they're selling their houses.
Absolutely. You see 826 Kentucky Street.
Big movement. I was actually reading this morning. It's like a friend of mine, their Etsy shop is basically... Etsy's like crashing and burning in 2018. So all these people who have traditionally sold on Etsy are now creating their own websites and building Shopify.
Hover.com/twit. Yeah. And it'll work with Shopify too. And I use the email feature all the time for personalized email. Stand out and brand yourself. You want Patrick at Leoville.com?
I'm good.
Okay. Stand out and brand yourself online. Patrick at LeoLaporte.com.
You know, I actually have content in and I'm flipping the switch for PatrickNorton.com.
Yes! Finally, ladies and gentlemen, I'm glad you got your name. You were smart. Go to hover.com/twit and save 10% off your first purchase. Already low prices get even lower when you go to hover.com/twit. Twit. And save 10% off your first purchase.
I like lower prices.
All right, so... Okay, neither phone has died. But they are waterproof. You think... But see, helium should... Whoops.
Hey,
oh,
there.
Crap. I touched a button.
Oh.
All right.
So I thought that was its death throw. I was so excited.
I could just press the stop button.
This is the only time you will ever hear either one of us be excited about a phone dying. Especially...
We may not have gotten enough helium in there.
Well,
should we
push
some more
in? Balloons.
No. That's enough. Let's talk about the Cavo.
You don't want me to help you kill $2,000 worth of phones in one afternoon?
You've done enough, Patrick.
You thought Apple Day was expensive.
You've done more than enough. So when the first Cavo came out, it was beautiful. It had like wood grain.
Bamboo, and removable tops, brass elements,
totally
HDMI ports. It promised the future of home automation,
but you know what,
and theater control.
4K and Dolby Atmos.
Yeah, it was a big. It was one of those moments where you would be talking to people and they'd be like, "We know early adopters have 4K television sets and HDR, and our product doesn't support that. We are aware of this issue, sir." And they weren't like that. They were actually pretty gracious about it. But it was frustrating, right? Because you had this machine that was going to, you know, use a whole bunch of HDMI ports on the back, send one HDMI port out to your AV or your sandbar.
And instead of buying an AV receiver, you could...
You can use this with an AV receiver. You can use it with a soundbar.
Okay.
The idea,
so it's
though...
It's not a big HDMI switcher. It does more than that, right?
Yeah, well, it is a big HDMI switcher. Okay. Well, actually, the first Cavo was a big HDMI switcher. The first Cavo had 8 HDMI ports. This one only has 4.
All right.
So, like, for example, for Shannon
four
and
in
I...
4 in and 1 out.
4 in and 1 out. You know, 4 is barely enough. It's not enough for Shannon because she's got, like, 18 consoles at home. For most people, 4 HDMI ports is more than enough.
You can count them up. Your Roku, your Apple TV, your console, your don't forget your TiVo or your cable box. 4 is right in the smallest number most people.
Yeah. But, I mean, we also
DVD
travel
player,
in circles
Blu-ray
where
player.
People have a lot of, you know... But... Like the original one, there's 2 or 3 things going on here. Is one, this one's much easier to set up. So, like, you plug your, like, I have an Apple TV, a Blu-ray player, a Roku player, an over-the-air tuner. The output port, of course, runs on my AVR. It's Ethernet or wireless. They include, should you have your stuff locked away from or in a room or a closet or a cabinet.
Are those IR blasters?
These are IR blasters. These are in the box. So it does.
They're kind of pretty IR blasters. Prettier than most. Yeah.
They're shiny, but they're you know, they're balls full of LEDs. And what you do is you walk through and you tell it what, basically, it for the most part, most of the stuff I plugged into it, it knew what the hardware was. The TV tuner was older, and I had to manually set up and configure, like, the play and the pause and the channel stuff. It's, one, so much easier to set up than the original one.
Yeah.
Two, you know, I feel like they got rid of some of the fancier features, because what it does is once you've got your hardware set up, you do things like you give it your HBO Now information, your Netflix information, and then for the supported services, what I can do is I'd be like, watch Black. You know, I hit the microphone button and
oh,
I go,
you can talk to it.
I can talk to it. I say, watch Black Panther, and it digs through, and it's like, oh, okay, I can watch it on Netflix, or I can purchase it on iTunes, or I can purchase it on Amazon
that
Prime.
That was originally their biggest selling point,
right.
Was you could talk to it, and it would find your content wherever it lived.
And it would,
but you can do that now on an Apple TV.
Yes.
And
kind of.
You could kind of do it on a Roku. I mean, that.
Kind of.
That was
And you
a
can
solution.
Kind of do it on a Cavo. I think part of the issue is, you know, what you really want is you want to walk in and be like, television, play that last episode of Paul Dark I didn't finish last night. And you want it to, like, you know, you want that. Jarvis is what I want.
The Alexa Fire TV Cube does that, the Amazon Fire TV Cube. I can do exactly that.
Hey, Leo, you know, if you bought that on Amazon, you'd be a happier man and people would like
it
you more.
It was cheap.
There's a certain amount of Leo. Have you purchased anything from Amazon Prime? Leo, it's been a while since you purchased something.
Okay.
Can I tell
I
you about something
point.
You could purchase on Amazon? Sorry. The Amazon Fire stuff's great, except for the fact
it's a big Amazon plug. I agree
with
you 100%.
One constant. So you set this up, and I tell it, and it gives me my options. One of the things it doesn't do, it does not do the machine vision stuff. It doesn't feel as deeply linked as it did before. It's not trying to do as much. But what it does really, really well. For example, you know, it acts as an overlay. I ask it to play something. It lets me choose where to play it. And then instead of me clicking a bunch of buttons on my remote, it launches it. Now, if you're a speed demon with your remote and you know who you are, this may feel slower. If you live a more gracious lifestyle and you're not going, you're going to actually probably find this a little... You know, it's fine if you're not sort of like hyper
Are you saying it's not super responsive?
It's responsive, but like, I'll hit thing, and then you'll get a little swirly because
that's not good.
But hold on, right? What it's doing when you see that swirly, it's going like, oh, I have to shift to the Roku. I have to launch this application, and I'm going to go to this part of this application.
How does it compare to like the Harmony Hub, which does similar things?
This is in some ways, you know, they're very similar products, right? Because the idea is like
same price too, by the way. Yeah. We didn't mention this is only $100.
Yeah, and that was
compared to the old one, which is $400.
This is a quarter of the price, right? Yeah. So if you have a television and an AVR or a soundbar, and you've got like an Apple TV and a Roku, and you have the services this uses. For example, what's frustrating for me is if they aren't integrated with your particular application or service. For example, they don't have the PBS isn't integrated into this. So when I hit the microphone button and I say, "Find me this,"
we're going to work on that.
It doesn't know that you know, Poldark like season 4 is out on PBS and I can watch it for free on PBS. It basically tells me all the places I can find episodes 1 through 3.
Right.
It doesn't do like one thing that's frustrating for me because I'm a projector owner.
So broadcast television in general is not on here.
Well, it's not so much that broadcast television isn't on here, but they have a list of apps they are integrated with deeply. And if you primarily watch one of the apps that's not deeply integrated on this, it will not be as useful.
It's a bad idea.
I don't think it's a bad idea.
CAAVO. Would you replace it? So you still need the Roku, you still need the Apple TV.
It's not a set top box. It's designed. You need, which if you're somebody who finds it frustrating, or if you have family members that you find frustrating to do tech support for, who have like a Blu-ray player, an Apple TV, and a Roku, and it's like, you know, if you've ever gotten a phone call, it's like, honey, where's the iTunes? It's like, it's on the Apple TV, Mom. Like, oh.
That's the big problem. My wife says, if anything happens to you, I'll never be able to watch TV again.
So, and this is basically designed to have one thing that makes it fairly easy.
Now, I actually wrote a manual, like a 20-page manual for how to watch our TV.
It's very sysadmin-ish.
It's very complicated. And whatever you do, don't put the remote in helium.
Yeah, well, this is designed to do. So when you're talking about a Harmony remote.
Oh, yes, it works with Echo and Google. Oh,
it's pretty slick. When you have a Harmony remote, it controls all of your hardware. It will also do things like, of course, turn down the lights. It will roll down your projection screen. You can use it to integrate the other home automation stuff inside your house. This is super concentrated on your home theater.
It's just TV.
It's much more TV friendly than it is projector friendly, but most people don't own projectors, so I get why they did that.
Who should buy this?
People who want to try something that's a little more sophisticated.
Than a Harmony Hub, say. Well,
the Harmony Hub stuff is really sophisticated. For example, like with my Harmony Hub, I can hit the button and my screen rolls down and the lights dim and everything turns on.
Yeah.
This is more dedicated to most of the people who have home theaters. They don't have a projection screen. Right. They don't have Philips light bulbs. They don't have a bunch of extraneous stuff. Right. Now, in the future, they could add a lot of that into this. Right now, I think what they've retrenched, they've done the basics really, really well, especially compared to the $400 version we saw earlier this year, and they're doing something that's a really viable, I think, thing to consider versus a Harmony remote, especially if you have a fairly simple system where I need it to control my television, my ABR, or my soundbar, and 2 or 3 devices.
So before you buy it, you should make sure that the services you most use are in there. If you wanted to control more than just a home theater, it might not be a good choice.
It may be in the future, but not currently. Yeah.
But it sounds for $99, this is pretty heavy gear, pretty nice gear.
Yeah, there's a lot going on in
there. There's some stuff in here, unless they put lead weights in it.
I don't think so. We could open it up.
The other issue would be, of course, if you needed more than 4 inputs.
Well, if you have an Apple TV, a Roku, 2 consoles, a Blu-ray player, and this isn't going to do it. But if you're looking for a way to control, you know, your system or to hand a remote to somebody and have them talk to it and have it do it, just to make it easy.
There's a lot to be said for that, yeah.
And someone who Leo's not allowed to die because then Lisa won't be able to watch.
She can't watch TV.
And that's a problem.
Says, there's 15 remote controls on the
You
coffee
should
table.
Set this up. You should get one of these, set it up, and see if Lisa likes it better.
Yesterday, last night, we're watching TV. The Apple TV remote must have fallen in the crack in the sofa, because every time I sat down, it stopped playing. So I had to stand up for the rest of the night. This would be a good solution for that.
This would be a good solution for that. I will say, Apple TV in particular, you can press the mic button on this.
That's
but
a better remote.
You talk to the Kavo. You don't talk to the Apple TV Siri.
How many times have I said that? Talk to the Cavo. C-double-A.
Take the Cavo.
V.
Leave the cannoli.
Oh.
No, wait.
$100, though, I have to say. At that price, it's inexpensive enough that it might be well worth a try anyway. Yeah. I couldn't recommend the $400 one.
You know, funny comment down in you know, Twisted Mister. When did we all become too lazy or incompetent to operate a remote control? To set up, to launch, right? To launch a Blu-ray on my machine, on my system at home, if I didn't have a Harmony remote or a Cavo, would require either physically touching or a remote for the projector, the projection screen,
horrible,
the AVR, the Blu-ray player, horrible, and I'm not even going to get into the fact that some people also have it triggering things like, you know, right, shades and lights.
Right.
So the idea is, it's not about incompetent to operate a remote control, it's just having everything combined in one place that makes this, basically it makes the whole experience less irritating.
You know, in my day, we would actually get up out of our seat and walk to the TV and turn the knob.
Remember, that's why you had children.
Turn remember the whistling remote five controls?
I miss the ultrasonic remote controls.
I don't think these are going to die. It's been half an hour now.
I can fix that.
Stop
I'm here
it
for you.
It's been half an hour now, and the helium has not killed. So maybe the 10R, Apple maybe fixed this problem. Maybe the waterproofing in the 10R. We didn't expect the Android to die because apparently Android phones
maybe
don't use
impure
this
helium.
You know, I'm going to go get my 10S and try it with that. How about that?
What's going to be awesome is right about the time you get the 10S into there, they'll all stop running.
I want my phone to die.
And then you're going to have to go to Best Buy. You're going to have to drive up to the next town to buy a phone to use on the way home.
This
tonight
is like Al Capone's
vault. Oh, you can go to
vault.
Target.
It's just a disappointment all round. My phone didn't die. Well, we'll leave it in the helium. We'll see.
Oh, my goodness.
You watch. The minute we go off the air, both phones will go.
Yeah.
Thank you, Patrick, for being the guinea pig on these. When we got the Cavo in, I said, I literally had it at home for a couple of weeks. I said, let Patrick review this. I can't. I don't want to take my whole system apart. All right. Let
That's
me
reasonable
show you a couple of things. This is the dongle that comes with this, the world's thinnest notebook computer. I had the predecessor to this, and I loved it, the Acer S7. This is the Acer Swift 7. It is, wow, look how
really thin.
You could cut a steak with that. It is,
and such a
good apt use for it. Yeah?
You deliver. You seem so excited by it. Here,
so
let me
it is less you than 9 millimeters top to bottom.
Okay, go ahead.
To compare that, the new MacBook Air 15.6 millimeters. This is less, fewer than 9 millimeters. And it's actually a beautiful device. It is Windows 10, obviously, with a touch screen. This is a 1080p screen.
If you like shiny black objects that really gather those fingerprints. Actually, I got to say, it's not.
Speaking of fingerprints, it's got a nice fingerprint reader right there.
Actually, I apologize. I'm not leaving any fingerprints.
No, go ahead and try. You just stop licking your finger and doing it.
No, I rub
no
my
nose.
No one
would do that.
You don't ever touch your nose when you're working on
you
a computer.
You savage.
I have befouled Leo's computer.
A very nice big glass trackpad. This one has LTE built in. I think increasingly I'm going to buy devices that have built-in wireless connectivity.
It's pretty cool.
I love that idea of going out and having a coffee and still being online. 14-inch Gorilla Glass multi-touch display. This one is equipped as an i7 in its 7th generation. Don't do that!
It's Gorilla Glass.
He's trying to break my display.
I'm not trying to break your display.
Bezels are fairly small, except for the bottom bezel here, which is a little bit hefty. But, you know, that's life in the big city, I guess. And as usual, with smaller bezels, the cameras end up in very inopportune places. This Acer has the camera on the bottom of the screen, which, yeah, mainly means like it's looking at my double chins the whole time. I don't like that. This is 8 gigs of RAM. I think you can go up to, can you go up to 16? I think you can on this. But actually, as priced, i7, 8 gigs of RAM, 256 gig PCIe NVMe SSD. That's good. i7, it's $1,699. So it's got a really good price. And I think a very attractive form factor. Two USB 3.1 Type-C ports on it. Not Thunderbolt, USB 3.1. Headphone jack. Yay, headphone jack. 720p webcam or nostril cam. There's the various configurations. All of them are running Windows 10. Windows 10 Home on the lower end, Windows 10 Pro.
Much like the MacBook Air, these are not going to be speed demons.
These are Y processors, so it's the same kind of
Intel processor in here. And there's good reason for that. You want to get the low-power processors because, as you might imagine, the battery in this is not massive.
I was surprised how good the keyboard is, which means there's like no Z in this device to stuff a battery.
That's right. It's actually pretty good travel on the keyboard. Much better, I think, than the Macintosh keyboards, the modern Macintosh. Yeah, it's a 32-watt-hour, 4580 milliamp-hour battery. Just, you know, the note here is like more than 4,000. This is basically a smartphone battery in this thing. And as you might imagine, I got like typically 3 or 4 hours, maybe 4 hours.
But they say up to 10 hours of battery
up
life.
Up to. I never believe when they say up to.
Right there.
Yeah.
Right there.
I never got up to that. I got up to about 3 hours.
Ouch.
Well,
that's very 2002.
Here's the deal. It's a good price of $16.99. And if what you want to do is prize thinness over all other attributes like speed and long battery life, we know that if you put you want a more battery life, you get a bigger computer, right? But if you want something that's really thin, it's, you know what it is? It's
if you want your laptop to be just as frustrating as the
phone. No, it's an executive laptop. And look, it even comes with this nice pouch. This fine pseudo Naugahyde Acer pouch. I can't say no to this as long as you understand what you're getting. You're getting ultra thin, not great battery life, not great performance.
This is about the aesthetics.
It's about aesthetics. That is the
Acer. And the aesthetics are nice.
Swift 7. I really liked my S7. Similar characteristics because it was so light, so easy to carry around. That's going to be up to you. If you want that kind of thin, light laptop. Now, let's move on to the opposite.
Not so thin and light.
$16.99. This thing is $3.99. It's actually exactly the opposite, but it's a Chromebook. Look at the size of this. This is one of the biggest Chromebooks out there.
It's massive for a Chromebook.
It is massive. Oh, let me log in here. Don't look. Don't peek.
No peeking.
I will, you know,
Leo's
normally with a Chromebook.
Password.
I will attach it to my Android phone, but my Android phone right now is sucking helium.
Is that a 15 or a 17 inch?
It looks like 17, doesn't it? And look at the size of the bezels.
Bezel.
Man. But this is a 1080p 15-inch display. And I think the price is right. This is $399.
Ooh.
With that, you get, they call it a Pentium. They used to call them Atoms, I think.
Yeah.
It is an N4200. It is quad-core, 1.1 gigahertz. 4 gigs of RAM. There is no 8 gig option. I like to see, for high-end use, more RAM in a Chromebook, but 4 is fine.
I don't know if I would target a $400 device at high-end use.
Yeah, exactly. I do. I think I'm always trying to get less sophisticated, especially elders, to use Chromebooks. They're more secure. They have the power wash for banking and surfing and email, the kinds of things, simple uses. A Chromebook is great, no security issues at all. But often they say, but the screen is so small. So this is a good alternative.
Right.
And it is a spin. So they've got the 13-inch spin, which is also unibody aluminum. And this does the same thing. So you
Netflix.
Can go in tent mode. You can go in tablet mode.
Nice.
If you're watching Netflix, it's great. Notice it immediately reversed.
I mean, one of the things I would just want to amplify what you said is I know people who are very deep in computer security, and they have configured their small offices with Chromebooks.
They're secure.
Yeah.
And if anything goes wrong.
I mean, until somebody finds the incredible, awesome, amazing flaw, but Google seems to be working pretty hard to prevent
that.
Well,
I think, unfortunately, Google is doing a little bit to reduce Chromebook security. When a Chrome OS just ran the Chrome browser, you'd have to get a malicious extension on the Chrome browser.
Right.
But this and most new Chromebooks now run the Android store. That means there is always the option to download Android app.
Well, I mean, we'll use the feeling words in the group today, people.
What do you feel?
I feel that Android the Android store is becoming a little more secure.
Absolutely.
I think we saw some really nasty stuff in China a couple of years ago. I don't think it's as bad, but I will say, you know, you might want to monitor what people install on these if they're kind of extension.
Well, and also remember that it's the Android store kind of in emulation. So there is, it's almost
sandboxed.
A little sandboxed. The other thing you can do, and you can do it on this, is you can now run Linux on these, which means command line applications. There's a Crostini project, which allows you to put Debian Linux on here. In addition, without reducing security, not going into an insecure developer mode, but literally have Chrome OS, Android, and Linux command line apps on one device.
That's
kind
slick.
Of an interesting mix of usage. This is big and heavy. This is like, you know, this is like the desktop replacement. But at the price, it's a nice, solid design. I like the kind of
It's got texture.
Matte texture unibody. It's not unibody, but aluminum top. I really think that screen is great, especially for people for whom readability is high priority. It's 1080p. And, man, the battery life, even though the battery is not hugely bigger than the Swift 7, it's a 4670 milliamp hour battery, three cells, you're going to get, and truthfully will get, they say 13 hours. You're going to get about 10 hours on this thing.
Wow.
The Chromebooks are pretty, you know, scant in their use of power. I think that and even with this big display.
They're not exactly big phones, but they're kind of like big phones.
Yeah, they are like big phones. It's a fanless design, too, which means it'll operate quiet. 360-degree hinge means, you know, you can do it in all those modes. And I have to say, I'm
just double-checking for the headphone jack.
What I love to see is the variation we're starting to see now in Chrome OS.
Yeah.
Laptops, desktops, tablets. Google, of course, now has a tablet, this Pixel Slate. And that is good because I think the Chrome experience is very good, and the Chrome OS experience, and I think that more people should use these.
Well,
you see a Type-C power adapter there, which is nice. It means you can charge it with almost anything. Type-A, USB. Really, connectivity is not premium on these kinds of at a premium on these kinds of devices because, and even a micro SD card, so you can get more storage in here as well.
Well, also you can pull photos off your camera or something like that.
That's right. Yeah.
I mean, part of it's also is there's a generation of people who grew up with these in education,
in schools,
and are now looking to buy these as adults, or maybe they're just like, well, you know, why would I buy a MacBook? Why would I buy a Windows machine?
Save your money.
Use Chrome.
Be more secure. Mm-hmm. I think a Chromebook is a great idea, and this is a very nice. That's the Acer Spin 15. The Spin 13 just came out, and this is one everybody's been waiting for. Unibody design. We'll try to get a look at one of those as well. $399 as equipped, 15.6-inch, nice Chromebook. So a couple of really nice new designs from Acer. I like the
variety. You know what feels nice when Leo keeps touching it in a review?
Okay, my phones are still working. I've never been more disappointed in my life. Neither phone has died.
Here. Hey, Leo, catch!
Stop it! We're going to wrap things up with our mailbag. But speaking of phones, we were able to get a OnePlus 6T, the hot new Android phone.
Mr. Jason Howell is going to answer the question, should I upgrade from my incredibly inexpensive Moto G6? Is this the flagship I can actually afford, or is it a travesty of a mid-range phone?
Patrick wants to know because he wants to buy one. Take a look.
It's that time of the year again where OnePlus makes you forget about their other flagship release and tempts you with their step up from what you already thought was, you know, pretty cool. The OnePlus 6 saw its official release back in May, and here we are at the height of smartphone season with the expected update, the OnePlus 6T. And as is usually the case for OnePlus, if you allow for that addendum of a T to the 6 to indicate an incremental improvement, you would be shortchanging yourself. Often, it's the T release that brings the more impressive upgrades. So let's dive into the OnePlus 6T to see what tricks OnePlus has up its sleeve this time. As we've come to expect, the OnePlus lineup is almost always about top-of-line features in a value-price category. The OnePlus 6T starts at $549, which gets you the premium Snapdragon 845 processor, along with a new baseline of 128 gigs of storage, as well as a larger 3,700 milliamp-hour battery underneath. That leads to a design that is a slight bit thicker than the 6, but not by that much. That larger battery is made possible by OnePlus's decision, like nearly every other major device maker nowadays, to eliminate the analog headphone jack in favor of USB-C. Like you didn't see that coming a mile away. But that larger battery makes for improved longevity, and we can all get behind that, I would say. The 6T has OnePlus's standard notification toggle switch on the side that I still can't help but confuse for the power or display button. Maybe someday I'll adjust, but let's focus on the front of the device for now. And notice just how nearly bezel-less this device actually is. The bottom chin is slightly thicker than the sides, but up top, you're going to notice a relatively minuscule notch. let's call it a teardrop notch. When put side by side with the newly released Pixel 3 XL, it's hard to ignore just how much less of an eyesore the notch on the 6T is, comparatively speaking. That smaller notch space leaves more room for notifications to spread out, though really not that much more, but it's there, and it's probably the best notch I've seen on a phone to date. They achieved this Svelte implementation by eliminating the notification light that used to be up there next to the camera. So if you're a fan of that, you're going to be a little disappointed. Doesn't bother me personally, so I'm all for this new notch. Now, what you won't see until I actually turn off the display is something hidden underneath the display, and that's an optical fingerprint sensor. That's right, the 6T doesn't have a hardware fingerprint sensor in the chin or on the back like we've seen countless times before. It's embedded into the display, and you know where it is by the sharp green outline that shines through the glass here. Tap and hold, and you'll find your way into the device. I'm thrilled to see this technology. We've been hearing about it for so long now, and I've been using it regularly, though I will admit it seems to be slower than other fingerprint sensors I've grown accustomed to at times. Sometimes it's faster, sometimes it's slower, slightly longer wait times before gaining access to my device. It just takes a little getting used to. And honestly, if you have Face Unlock set up, then you might not need to use the fingerprint sensor as much as you might think. The cameras on the device are the same ones from the 6. No upgrades there. And if you remember my review of the OnePlus 6, then you'll know that I feel like the cameras on this device are sufficient, not groundbreaking, satisfactory for this price category especially. If you take a ton of pictures with your phone, this might not be your first go-to pick, but you could do a lot worse than the 6T. The software itself is actually pretty great. The 6T is running Google's latest version of Android Pie, though it is OnePlus's version of Android Pie. And OnePlus tweaked the gesture navigation setup into something a bit more palatable than Google's offering. Swiping up from the pill brings you to multitasking and never into the app drawer like we're used to seeing with Google's version of Pi. Kind of a strange implementation there. If you want the app drawer in this case, you just swipe up from the center of the screen. It only takes a few times to learn this new style, and it's way more approachable. Now, OnePlus does offer an entirely different gesture navigation style that eliminates that navigation bar down at the bottom entirely. That, of course, takes even more time to learn, but once you actually get the hang of it, it's really quite smart. Anyway, you have good options in software, another hallmark of OnePlus phones. Finally, it should be noted that this is the first phone in OnePlus's five-year history to strike a deal with a U.S. carrier. So you will actually see these devices in T-Mobile stores, which should be a big opportunity for the company to broaden its brand exposure. Not only that, they also finally cleared this device for use on Verizon's network. That's a first here. OnePlus is moving on up. Overall, for $549 to start, this is a lot of phone for the money, especially in this age of $1,000 mega smartphones. Do you need all that phone? And more importantly, do you have all that dough to spend on them? If not, the 6T is waiting for you. It has some really cool tricks up its sleeve for when you come knocking. I'm Jason Howell. You can catch my reviews on All About Android and a whole lot more on Tech News Weekly every week here on twit.tv.
Now, that's impressive. And I like on-screen fingerprint. That's a good sign. Maybe we'll get fingerprint back on the iPhone. What do you think? Are you going to buy that? Replace your Motorola with that?
Maybe.
We'll see. We'll see.
We'll wait a little bit longer.
$549 is a lot.
Well, I also have 400 gigabytes of storage in my G6 now.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. There are some very big micro
SD
cards.
How did you do that?
I dropped a micro SD card in it.
It's more than 256 gigs?
No, they claim it only supports 128 gigabytes, but it's SDXC, which is actually a 2-terabyte controller.
So how big is the card?
400 gigabytes.
You have a 400 gigabyte card? How much did that set you back?
I got it on sale on Amazon for like $80.
What? Crazy, man.
I can store all the music.
So we hypothesized that maybe the helium was at the top of the bag, right, floating, and that the phones is in the bottom of the bag were only in air. So I'm pushing them to the top of the bag, and they still won't die, damn them.
Again, the only time you'll ever hear us cheering.
It's just a disappointment.
Yeah, cheering for phone deaths or being
disappointed. All right, should I give up? Should I just say, well, helium didn't kill the radio star?
Really fighting this urge to...
I know, don't hit my phones.
I'm not going to hit your phones.
This was a fixable...
I'm just going to fling them.
This was a fixable thing.
No. It still hasn't stopped.
It's still ticking. Look at that.
Here, I'll hold that for you.
No, you can't have it.
I'll bring it back in a couple weeks. You got 9 phones. You'll never notice.
So I don't know what we did wrong, Patrick.
We didn't use enough helium.
I mean, more helium! Let's do the mailbag.
Yes.
Here we go. Fire when ready, Gridley.
Thank you, sir.
Look at that giant. You like that giant screen Hisense TV behind there?
It's lovely. That. Yeah. How much does that thing cost?
You don't have to ask.
You know, we should talk about the Epson.
$10,000. I didn't buy it. That's a review unit.
Okay.
Which they're never getting back.
That's not how it works.
I know. Alas.
I'm actually in love with Epson's 4010, which just started shipping.
But is it a short throw projector?
No, and I don't care.
Oh. Yeah, you said you have a projector.
Because I can actually afford a
10,000 is a little pricey, but I love it because the projector's right under the screen. It's pretty kind of cool. Anyway, I don't know how I might mention that. Would you go ahead and start? You have email number one.
Ty in Jerusalem, hopefully I'm saying this right, sent us this video. Do we have the video? Can we roll?
Hello, Leo and the Tweet team.
Hey.
Here's the question.
Yes.
I thought it's about time to replace my old MacBook Air 2014.
Yes.
And I was very excited with the new announcement about the new MacBook Air.
Yes.
But on a second thought, I saw that with all the configuration, with additional memory, some more hard disk, the price starting with $1,200 go around $1,500 and even more.
Yeah, mine costs $1,799.
Starting to think maybe I need something different.
Yeah.
My main goal is to have something that is portable, long battery life, and then I was starting to think maybe looking at the iPod Pro, maybe I should use something with a pen. So maybe like the Microsoft Surface or the Surface Book 2. And I can also take advantage of a GPU there and so forth. But the main focus is a long battery life and being light and portable. And I know that in some program you mentioned that you really like the Lenovo. So I'm okay with going back to Windows. And I'm looking for suggestion about what would be a good suggestion for me. Thanks.
Thank you, Itai. I'm going to be in Jerusalem next year.
Ooh.
Yeah. What do you think? The problem is with, if you want to run Mac OS, sure you can Hackintosh a PC, but that's not a good experience in the long run.
There's nothing more frustrating than having a project due on your Hackintosh, yeah, and something being updated in your Hackintosh, suddenly becomes a Brickintosh.
I think Mac is a premium price. I mean, it just is. And I think that as I said, $1,799, I think, is what we configured. A 512 gig MacBook Air, there's no choice of processors with 16 right. gigs of RAM. $1,799 is high. You might look at, for $100 less, a better configuration on the Huawei MateBook Pro 10 Pro, which I think is X Pro, whatever.
Yeah, I mean, part of the challenge here is, right, is he wants a 2-in-1, you can't detach.
Air's not 2-in-1.
I don't want a 2-in-1 that you cannot disconnect to the keyboard when needed.
Oh, well, the Air is definitely not what you want then. Well, I don't believe you really want to disconnect that keyboard.
I would almost say, like, okay, how about an iPad Pro? But then you're moving yourself from Mac OS applications to iOS applications.
It's not like the Surface Pro is low priced.
Yeah, that was my thing.
Microsoft does the same thing.
I saw that. I was like, oh, you can have just you can have almost the same performance. It's like, depending on which Surface model you look at, in some cases, it's some of the worst performance I've ever seen out of a laptop.
Really?
Compared to its peers.
These Y processors, well, I guess they have a real eighth generation.
Well, it's also challenging when you put even when the models that are supposed to, even the models that are not Y models, if the thermals are, if the thermals on the processor at the edge, right, at the edge of the envelope for the device,
they'll be throttled.
Yeah, and I remember, like, I was a friend of mine bought one. And he's like, I spent $3,000 on this, and I was like, okay. And I ran some benchmarks, and, like, I had a 2-year-old XPS 13 that was like 30% faster.
Right.
A 2-year-old XPS 13 with a Core i5 in it that was like 20 or 30% faster on some of the benchmarks I ran than this brand new state of the art $3,000 Core i7 equipped, Surface.
It sounds like battery life is number one for
him.
I agree, the Pencil is great. I don't know if you're a designer, Itai, or why, but the Pencil on Surface or iPad, that's a really good thing for people who want to use that? I don't use it.
This is like the iPad Pro would be tempting if you want to stay.
The battery life on an iPad is phenomenal. 10 hours easily.
The Surface, depending on which Surface you get, the performance can be pretty acceptable.
But not great battery life.
Not great battery life, but not the worst battery life we've seen.
I would honestly look at the Huawei Mate X Pro. Am I getting that right? The MateBook X Pro. Right. But you don't get a pen. You do get touch. Yeah.
Well, I was thinking there's yoga, like the new round of yoga books. They have a pen built in. Oh, but though you can't detach the keyboard. There's an XPS 2-in-1. Oh, you can't detach the keyboard.
Yeah, well. Depends what you, you're going to have to, this is, all laptops are a compromise in one respect or another. You're going to have to decide what's most important to you and what's less important. And then you kind of have to make the choice based on that. If you want a 2-in-1, look at an iPad or a Surface Book. I think those are, or Surface Pro rather, those are very good choices. I personally am not a big Windows fan. I don't know, Art.
I'm pretty much running Windows all the time now. Because when I look at
Windows 10 is a lot better.
Windows 98 wasn't that bad. I mean, it wasn't that bad, folks.
Well, you heard it here first.
Compared to Windows 3.1, nothing was.
No, it was a lot better. Yeah.
But it's been challenging in the last couple of years for me to look at the price I would pay for the performance I would get off of Windows just destroys. Like I can't afford to render video.
You know,
on a Mac
runs Linux pretty darn well. Almost any PC.
Yes.
I put Linux on my second generation Yoga, the Lenovo, with a pen. Fantastic. Runs beautifully. OLED screen. MateBook 10 Pro actually runs Ubuntu very well, even though they don't mention it in there. I've seen some reviews. People put Ubuntu on it.
And generally speaking, the Linux seems to have enough of the battery performance issues resolved so that you're not looking. Because it used to be this huge delta between, like, this is how much battery life you get from Linux, and this is how much battery life you get from Windows.
You put TLP on there, and you're going to get very good battery life these days. I think Linux has come a long way in terms of hardware support. So I don't know what the right answer is for you, but if you want pencil, 2-in-1 battery, then I would look at the 12.9-inch iPad Pro. Not going to be cheap.
Right.
We're going to get you right up there to $1,700 pretty quick. But I think it's going to be a great experience. You just got to make sure that the apps you want run on iOS.
Yeah. And, read the reviews. If you want to go Windows, try to save some money. You're not going to save a lot of money with a Surface Book, but it's a possibility.
I'm getting that 12.9, the big one, and the Folio, so I have a keyboard. And I'm going to do an experiment. I'm going to see if I can make that my main machine. And the one thing that's going to be missing is coding, programming, but I've already got a server set up that I can SSH into and do the coding on that. So it's going to be an interesting test.
I wait with bated
breath.
How long
before I scream in pain?
I know several developers.
You can do it.
We'll talk about it after.
But I'm with you. Look at that Lenovo. That ThinkPad is a darn fine machine. You can't go wrong. It's just very industrial.
It's a laptop.
It's a laptop.
I use global knives at home. No, I mean, like,
this is a great. I'm a big fan.
This is a really, the keyboard on this is
awesome.
Outrageous.
You have the X1 Carbon.
Yeah.
I have the T470S over there and the X1 Yoga second generation at home.
Yeah.
You can't go wrong. Really nice machines, but they're not pretty.
And they're not 2-in-1.
I don't know. You can use a pencil.
I'm a gearhead. I think wrenches are pretty.
Yeah, I do too. Form follows function. Email number 2, hi, new screensavers. This comes from Robert. I like the idea of password protecting my Windows 10 PC.
Oh, yeah.
Haven't used BitLocker before. That's Microsoft's full disk encryption, but you have to have Windows Pro for that.
Yeah.
What's the right way to set it up and use it? What are the pros, the cons, the risks of data loss? Thanks in advance. Do you use BitLocker?
I do not use BitLocker because I haven't paid the $100 to get
BitLocker. You have to get Pro. You can you can use Veracrypt instead, which is full disk encryption.
Yeah, I was going to say, some computers, you can dig in. It's a really great article Whitson Gordon did a few months ago for the New York Times. Whitson Gordon from Lifehacker and How To Geek. The one thing that protects a laptop after it's been stolen, and that's a really good thing to point out, is because in most cases, unless you plan on losing your laptop or you are preparing for the possibility of losing your laptop, encrypting your hard drive doesn't gain you much. Now, if you've read things about, like, you know, government employee loses laptop with 27 million names and, you know, addresses on it, that's the kind of situation where it would have been better if the laptop hard drives were encrypted.
I tell you, I encrypt every SSD that comes into my hands before I use it, because SSDs are hard to fully erase. They can leak information. Nowadays, almost all modern hardware supports encryption to the level that it doesn't slow you down at all.
Which is good.
It's completely transparent.
It used to not be like that.
In fact, Macs now, if they have the T2 chip built in, come with File Vault, their hard drive encryption, built in, turned on by default. And I think that's a great thing. I do it on my phones. In fact, most new phones now, certainly iOS and almost all new Android phones, are encrypted by default.
Yeah.
If you get a Windows 10 machine, either look into Veracrypt or spend a little bit more and use BitLocker. Here's the pitfall on BitLocker. It's certificate-based encryption. It's not password-based.
Well, so there is a password you can lose.
You still have a password. But even if you, say, for instance, this is very common, you move the hard drive to another machine or you install a new version of Windows, just because you're logged into the same account doesn't mean you can get to your data. You want to save that password certificate on a separate drive somewhere. You still need the password, but you need that certificate. So put that on another drive somewhere else. Otherwise, you'll be very surprised when your encrypted data is no longer readable because, well, you did a backup and restore or something like that.
Yeah, I mean, it's the same thing with, you know, whether you're talking about Veracrypt or BitLocker, losing your password is a nightmare. Right. Veracrypt, in case you're wondering, it's kind of the progeny of TrueCrypt.
And that's free. It's open source. I think it does a great job.
You also can do one of the things Whitson points out in this article is some Windows machines actually have the opportunity. If you go into Settings, System, go to About, and scroll down, there might be a device encryption option in there that is not BitLocker or does not require upgrading the operating system that can secure your drive.
Yeah, so if your laptop has the TPM chip in it, often they'll provide that. I always, in Linux, I turn on Lux, which comes with most Linux distributions. I have to enter a password before I can boot the system. Same thing. Linux, almost all Linuxes have built-in hard drive, full drive encryption. Turn that on in every case. Yeah. And if you're using Windows, maybe spend $100 more. Because BitLocker is so easy and transparent. But again, when it says, do you want to save the certificate? Save the certificate somewhere else, on a USB drive or somewhere, and lock it up so that you have access to the drive. Because it's very easy to forget, move stuff over, not move the certificate, and you're out of luck.
Yeah.
Yep.
That would be bad.
Yep.
But it's, I mean, once you've turned it on, you're done.
Yeah, that's the beauty of it. And it doesn't slow your machine down.
No.
You just, and the thing is, if somebody gets your laptop, yeah, they can't log into it, but they can take the drive out, put it on another machine, and read it.
Not if it's encrypted.
Not if it's encrypted. Also, the issue of selling the laptop. If you have an SSD and you sell it, even if you erase everything on the SSD, some stuff will stay there because of wear leveling. So encryption means that the minute you give somebody that drive, it's garbage on there. They can't use it. All you have to do is delete the key. It's done.
I was about to try to make a really funny line tying back to our conversation about giving up passwords at the beginning of the show, but it wasn't clever enough.
No. That's another point, Hey, thank you, Patrick Norton.
Thank you for having me, sir.
TechFang, techthing.com.
Yeah.
And, of course, with the fabulous Robert Herron. What is it? Excel?
AV Excel.
AV Excel.
If you're looking to buy a home theater or speakers or screens, Robert's amazing. Did he calibrate that one?
He sure did.
Yeah.
Trusted by Neil Laporte.
What is the website? AVXL.com?
AVEXCEL.com.
It's excellent. And of course, every week on Twitch, This Week in Computer Hardware, now with Patrick and Alan Malventano, as Ryan Schrout moves on to become Chief of Performance at Intel.
Chief of Performance.
And he's in charge. Performance Strategy. Thank you, everybody, for being here. We're changing times tomorrow night.
Ooh.
Set your clock back, falling back. Which means that we will be, for some of you, at a new time. For some of you, at the same old time. It's very confusing.
Unless you didn't reset your clock.
Right. We are at 3 p.m. Pacific, 6 p.m. Eastern time. That's going to stay the same, but it'll be Pacific Standard Time next week. And if you follow us on UTC, actually, this is the best way. I will tell you when we are going to do this live on UTC. It'll be 2300 UTC. You figure out when we're on, because I can't. It's too confusing.
You can watch it live at twit.tv/live. You can be in the chat room if you do that, which is, of course, irc.twit.tv. And if it's all too confusing for you, just get on-demand versions at our website, twit.tv/NSS, or wherever you subscribe to podcasts. If you subscribe, you'll get it each and every day, the minute it's done, which is right now. Thank you, Patrick. We'll see you next time on the new Screensavers. Bye-bye! My phones aren't dead! They're not dead! I'm so disappointed!